Kessler. I'm with Eric Berger. Elon Musk in the desperate early days that launched SpaceX, his book Liftoff. It is now 2007, the spring again, March of 2007. We're back at Omelek Island. The crew is gathered again for the second flight. There are some details, however, we need to introduce. Eric, before we set the rocket up and light the candle, what is the slosh concern? What are the baffles for the second stage?
So the idea is that as you go up in a rocket, your fuel drains down, right? It's liquid oxygen, it's kerosene, and you know the tank's empty, and you've got to sort of somehow manage it to make sure that the fuel keeps coming out, and it's so you pressurize that space, and sort of it comes down, and it's less of an issue with the first stage, but when you get to the second stage, you're in microgravity, so you don't have gravity pulling down on the rocket, so pulling, you know, sort of pulling the fuel down toward the engine, and especially the second stage is also going sideways relative to the surface of the Earth. So one of the big debates they had at SpaceX before that second flight was on this second stage, which takes off about two and a half or three minutes after launch. Do you need some kind of mechanism there to help that fuel flow, propellant flow toward the engine? And that would have involved basically putting in slosh baffles. Now, the challenge with that is the second stage is pretty delicate already because you don't want to have much mass, because every pound you put on the second stage, you're taking away from a pound you could put on a satellite or payload. And so you want to maximize the amount of stuff you can carry to orbit. So slosh baffles are kind of like, it's almost like a ship in a bottle, like very delicate working inside there. And so they decided to not use slosh baffles because six of the seven computer models they'd run on it had basically shown that this slosh, basically the fuel sloshing back and forth and not going down toward the engine would not be an issue.
Also, it's weight. Weight is critical because they've already understood that the Merlin engine is not getting the thrust they expected in their computer models. And every pound they're losing or every 100 pounds they're losing mean a lot for the commercial enterprise that they're running here. They've got to sell this. We mentioned Gwynne Shotwell here, who is the president of SpaceX today, but she's the sales division all by herself. She's an experienced person in big space, and she is making presentations around the world. They have customers. They have Malaysia for a customer. They have NASA for a customer. They have the military for a customer. But they've got to deliver on their promise of how much they can lift into space. Eric makes the excellent point that they did a list of what are the 10 things we're worried about. And slosh didn't make it, Eric. It was the 11th on the list. And has that become a proverb at SpaceX, check number 11?
Yeah, their list of concerns now doesn't go to 10, it goes to 11. And so one of the quotes from Elon in the book is always go to 11, the play on the movie Spinal Tap.
It's good advice. I will take it to heart. Always go to 11. So we're back on Omelek Island. Buzza and Koenigsmann give up their Christmas with their families and working very hard. They do a wet dress rehearsal. One of the things I learned from Eric they've added are sensors and testing mechanisms that didn't exist for the first flight, because Musk is faster, better, cheaper. That's Musk. It's his money, and he's spending it to get to orbit, because once he gets to orbit, he thinks he has something to sell, and he's already thinking about Falcon 5 and Falcon 9. You say he's multitasking. I just don't think he can concentrate very long on one problem. He needs several at a time. How does he think about himself when he starts talking about Falcon 9 as they're preparing to launch Falcon 1?
You know, he is very good at focusing on the details of problems right in front of him, focusing on sort of the alligators closest to the canoe, if you will. But he also is always thinking ahead. So as they're building the Falcon 1, he's thinking about a Falcon 5 or a Falcon 9. And, you know, as they're flying the Falcon 9, he's thinking about Falcon Heavy and Starship. So he's always got the big picture in his mind, and sort of hires well to let his teams focus on those problems. I say most immediate problems, most immediate challenges.
The computer shuts down the first. There's an abort on the 21st. Everybody's anxious. They have to detank. They take risks. Buzza is taking the biggest risk because he's launch director. So they're ready to blast off. And the first stage works. Hooray. At this point in the book, I knew there was too much left, and so there was going to be trouble. I was waiting for it. What was the trouble, Eric?
So those gosh darn slosh baffles, the slosh in the second stage, they hadn't put the baffles in, and a couple minutes into the second stage's flight, it starts spinning out of control. And so they had not put a real satellite on this mission. It was still a test flight, but it spun out of control and they lost it. And so, but they didn't really see that as a big setback, John, because getting that first stage engine to light and fly its full mission profile and getting the second engine to light, you figured you could solve the second stage slosh baffle problem pretty simple. And so, you know, as Tim Buzza, the launch director, told me on Omelec, they had a tradition of getting drunk when they had success, and they had a tradition of getting drunk when they had failure. They had a celebration that night because they thought they were really close to orbit. This is March of 2007. Company was less than 5 years old, and they thought they were pretty close.
Yes, and I did too, although I do note that they do a lot of celebratory drinking or mournful drinking at the same time, although it seems to be mostly beer when they're out at Omelec. All right, so they've had two failures now, but they did reach orbit. They reached
no, orbit. Did, no. Did, they reached. They wrote. They reached space. They flew well above 100 kilometers, but the satellite, their dummy satellite and payload, did not reach orbit.
All right. So there's a distinction that Eric makes here. You need to reach space, but reaching orbit means that you've got to inject something into a stable orbit. Is that correct, Eric? So that doesn't
get
back down.
Yeah. And there's a general sense in the space industry that until you reach orbit, you're not really a real rocket company.
A real rocket company. It is now 2008. But we're back in Omelec for the first stage. There's a lot of drama in between in Eric's books, and I recommend it highly. We don't have time for anecdotes here. However, they are now organized on Kwajalein and on Omelec so that they have their own barge, the Peregrine Falcons. The catamaran takes them back and forth. They have some luxuries that never existed before, and we need to introduce a young man named Zach Dunn. Who is he?
Zach Dunn is a young engineer, just like a lot of people hired him out of college, and just very energetic propulsion guy, engine guy, worked with Jeremy Holman beneath Tom Mueller, and was just out there getting after it as much as he could, you know, putting everything he had into the company.
Yes, he dreamed of joining a rocket company, and he interned, and he went to college, and he worked at SpaceX, and now he's Jeremy Holman's deputy, because Holman is, I believe, left the company, but he appointed Dunn as his successor so that Mueller would have a lieutenant to back him up on all the details. And what is Dunn's specialty? Is it propulsion? Is that where he's working?
Yeah, he's worked very closely with the engine, and he ends up, you know, with all of the experience of being an intern in there several months with responsibility for the first stage performance. So he's a responsible engineer for the Falcon 9 or Falcon 1 first stage. That's at SpaceX. It's a meritocracy in that sense. If you work hard and show some ability, you get put in the line of responsibility very quickly.
It's August 3rd, 2008. The world of capitalism is about to collapse. I mentioned, Eric mentions it peripherally, that what's going to happen next is a crash around the world. However, at the same time, the rocket lifts off at 3:34 p.m., having had a thunderstorm pass overhead. The Merlin engine on the first stage works perfectly. And then we have what is described politely as an anomaly. What is it?
So what happened is that they had made some changes to the engine, and they had not accounted for a little bit of residual propellant in the engine. And so the first stage starts separating from the second stage as expected, but then unexpectedly that first stage engine relights with this little bit of extra propellant. And that's enough for the first stage to fly up and bump the second stage a little bit and knock it out of kilter. And that kills the mission. And this was a huge disappointment because they had been so close on the flight previously, and they had put all kinds of customers on this mission. The DOD was on this mission. NASA was on this mission. Commercial customers. I mean, they were flying the ashes of Scotty from Star Trek as a part of the Celestis mission to put him into orbit in death. And it all came crashing back.
And the failure this time is profound, because I mentioned that Musk had budgeted for three. Also, I mentioned the markets are collapsing. So refinancing or extending the finance of one company is difficult, but two, Tesla is also being developed by the same team, Elon Musk and his colleagues, at the same time. So do they have the money for four tests? Elon Musk brings the whole crew back together in the headquarters back in Los Angeles, and he's going to give a speech. You have a wonderful scene, Eric, of people sitting on the table, and they expected to close down that day. Is that there? Was that the mood in the room?
Yeah, that was definitely the mood in the room. This was a day after that failure, and actually some of the employees were still back on Kwajalein, and they told me they weren't even sure if there was going to be airfare for them to fly home, right? They're going to have to buy their own tickets. But Musk gets up and in this meeting back in California and says, you know, this was unfortunate, but I believe in you guys and we're going to give it one more go. We've got the rocket parts out there in the factory for one more rocket, the fourth one. Let's do it in 6 weeks. And everyone knows it's the last chance. They're out of money. They don't have any more rockets. And so they've got to make that fourth one work.
Yes. And they need 6 months, but he gives them 6 weeks. So here goes the dramatic conclusion of the book is Liftoff. Elon Musk and the desperate early days that launched SpaceX. Eric Berger is the author. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.